But that there was going to be a second vote, so we had to stay. Unfortunately, we did not make the quorum. Honorable Jelly, we're still on the floor.
Thank you, Chair. I was on the view that when we left, Chair, on the view that as you have alluded, that an opportunity was always there available for any of the two persons, or Advocate Jiba and Advocate Mukwebi, for them to do, in fact, raise the issue earlier when we were given, when we gave them the opportunity to make presentation. I think today we would have been sitting here discussing maybe something different. But Chair, I think I want to confine myself on the matters of the procedures or the decisions of the committee before we can even get into the matter that we are here about. This committee, I think I agree also with the view that when we are going to make a decision on this matter, we should take ourselves serious as a committee, not only for oversight, a committee in terms of the separation of powers as a leg of our as a parliament, Chairperson, let me just put it like that. But also, Chairperson, I want to say we must take ourselves serious if we want people or the citizens, even other spheres of government, to take us serious. If we make decisions, we must adhere to those decisions. We must not be wishy-washy. They always say that, I don't know. But we must be sure of the decision that we make. For example, we agreed, we sat here, spend time in terms of deciding as a committee that the two advocates must make presentation in this committee. We agreed that they are going to make submissions, and we also gave them time, the time frame. We agreed on the time frame, Chairperson, as to they have to be given an opportunity and we have to be fair. We looked into all those matters of fairness in making sure that we don't find ourselves or the citizen don't look at us or as we are paging them. In this at this time, Chairperson, I just want to agree with the view that we don't give them an opportunity, especially Advocate Mukwebi, an opportunity to come and make a presentation. I will align myself with that. The reason being, Chairperson, even himself and his advocate, they will definitely not take us serious in future. Even others that will be coming after, they will never take us serious because we take this decision and we change tomorrow and we can be changed by any situation. So by that, I want to say, Chairperson, I don't think that it will be unfair for this committee to take a decision to say if we are sitting down and look into this matter seriously and taking a decision, we don't allow Advocate Mukwebi to come and make a presentation. I don't think it will be unfair. Even he knows, even wherever he is in his heart, that we gave him an opportunity. Like I said earlier, if he made a presentation, in fact, in his the first presentation, because he has already made two presentations now, in the first presentation, if he did raise this issue of saying he wanted to come and make a presentation, I have already said maybe we should have been sitting here for something else. Therefore, Chair, I want to say we are not allowing him to come and make a presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, I think my suggestion is that it would be better if we deal with both procedure and the merits of the case, because if we don't, then we still have to come back and deal with the merits of the case, which will take much longer. So I think if we can follow what Honorable Horn did, he dealt with everything, then it really saves us time. But I'm not saying that you are forced to do that, but I think it will save us time. Honorable Mufokeng and Honorable Ngola.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think Honorable Horn actually did the work for us. And if you can remember that most of the things that are raised here are things that we've been saying. Therefore, we are not moving from what actually is said here. And aligning myself also with the Honorable Maseko Jele, that we are not going to allow him to come in. The other thing that will make us not to do that, we respect our legal advisors and we work with them. But here he's saying that the advisors are a bit worried in his document. And if that is the case, we can allow him to go to court. We will do the parliamentary process. That's where he can actually challenge them there. But as for this committee, we don't allow him. That is my plea.
Thank you, Honorable Mona.
Thanks, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think, Chair, it is important to recall as the committee when we started to deal with this matter, so that we avoid appearing to be redundant, doing one thing for a long time. The Mahoro Commission, Chair, the court, the presentation, the presentations were done to the Mahoro Commission, to the President, to the committee itself. We have allowed them for two times that they must make presentations. Then they were given another 7 days to do such. At least we have been fair enough to deal with the matter and to process it thoroughly. It would not be an unfair administrative action if we say we don't allow him to come and do the presentation. It's just a matter of being here in person and writing it down, which I don't think really makes any particular difference in terms of what we have received for a number of times. We have even gone to an extent of respecting the court process and put the matter into hold until the court was done to deal with the issue of Advocate Jiba in particular, not Advocate Mukwebi, but was it relied on what the court will say with regard to Advocate Jiba and all that and all that. So, one, I do not think it will be an unfair administrative action if we say no. What actually has been presented before the committee through a written presentation is enough for it to lead us to the decision we wish to make. I think that's the first part. The second part I think, Chair, we are dealing with is that what do we then say? Well, in accordance to law, we're expected to say restoration or not, because that's what the law requires us to do. So I would say, Chair, we are not restoring Advocate Mukwebi as per what the NPA Act requires us to do, that we restore as in against what the President has decided on. So, Chair, I just want to, within this short space of time, without repeating everything, I then say, let us not grant another time for presentations, so that we are quick to close the matter, and two, Chair, as required by NPA Act, we are not restoring. Thank you very much. We are going to propose to the House not to restore.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Is there any member who still wants to say something before we... It's Honorable Ndlozi, Honorable Ufuke. Honorable Ndlozi.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. I think that it's very sad. You know, Parliament is supposed to be a Parliament of the people. Doesn't matter how strong you feel about certain individuals in society. How can a democratic parliament consciously say it will not hear someone who's asking to be heard? I don't know how we justify that to ourselves. Because we know there are limitations to the written word and the spoken word. That's why even a confession or an oath of office, you can't say I signed. You have to say it, because our jurisprudence takes the spoken word more seriously. But how can a parliament of the people say it won't hear someone who's asking to be heard? Like you, the idea of dismissing them at the distance there, I think it's a mistake, honorable members. And I think it will haunt us, because this parliament listens. It ought to be seen to be listening, even to the most dejected of people. But these are serious positions in society, leading important institutions or led in important institutions. Why wouldn't you want to hear such a person? Advocate Diba is not wrong. Don't demonize when legal minds are disagreeing about a certain take. If Parliament lawyers are offended by somebody disagreeing with their interpretation, then we're in trouble. And then now we must decide on the basis of how they feel. You don't want to take Parliament, that's money, to be challenged in court, and you say, I would rather go to court, when you could have just listened to a person. This is a parliament of the people. Mkhwebi is the people. He's a person, he's a human being. So, and this has to do with his position that he is in. I don't know, Honorable Chairperson. I think it's dangerous. And I think that this, if indeed this is the case, that we are deciding in this manner. Even those things of the Bible tell you, a wise man changes his mind. The guy is begging, please, can I just be listened to? Even if you are going to take a different decision, a parliament of the people would have given that opportunity to take you 30 minutes, maybe even an hour, to satisfy yourself that you have exercised your power, your prerogative as a different arm of the state. My final comment is that the implications, therefore, to the substantial issues will be frustrated by the fact that you don't seem to give credence to an oral representation. That should have been more important than a written submission. You know, you can close Parliament down, by the way. We can all just write to each other. There in the House, we just write to each other. And then we say, it's not important. We say we've decided because this view is this on the basis of the written word. But there are debates, even on the most insignificant issues, because the spoken word is that important. A person is begging to be heard by Parliament. Parliament rejects him.
Honorable Mfokeng, followed by Honorable Ngola, and, there are many hands. Let me give this as a last round. Honorable Mfokeng, Honorable Mola, Honorable Horn. Is there any other hand? Honorable Jada, you'll be the last one. We agree, honorable members. Honorable Jada is going to be the last one. Honorable Mola. Oh, sorry, Honorable Fulton, sorry.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not convinced about Honorable Ndozi's view. I wonder if Honorable Ndozi remembers how many times these people had an opportunity to present themselves. And in this committee, we gave them time. He made actually a submission as requested. He had a month when Jiba was in court. Why didn't he raise it? As he says that he was waiting for him, it's fine. But it cannot be that we are going to be listening to him as if we owe him anything. We owe this country. We owe the citizens of this country. We need processes to go because they are stalling processes of making sure that South Africa works. And if you can remember the letter that was written by Jiba and think that if he can have just time to read that letter, maybe we'll come to the same conclusion. Chairperson, we move on. We are not going to allow him. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mola.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, this is a very important committee of parliament. At no stage where it can resolve on matters on the basis of a vote of no confidence to legal parliament, to parliament legal services. It can never be a reason enough to say, we are not going to listen to Advocate Mkhwebo on the basis that he said the legal advices are worrying. It is not true that we can arrive at a decision on that pay, on those bases. I think, Chair, we agree on the basis that this is actually a parliament of the people. We are here on behalf of the people. But I think it is important to note as well that arriving at this decision is particularly on the protection of the actual people. Here we are seated with an opportunity to choose between a person and the people. NPA is a very serious institution of the people, which we must ensure that it enjoys its protection as well on behalf of the people of South Africa. So it is very important, Chair, that as much as we represent the people, but we choose the institution for the protection of the people. So, some of the people, it is true, I've got stronger expectations, oral evidence, some and written evidence, and all that. But I think what we are arriving on is on the basis of what has been provided to Parliament. That said, even in the letter, he wrote seeking for him to be heard. He does not say there are new facts. Well, we have had enough evidence, we've been fair enough, we've waited, we did not panic, so that we enable ourselves to arrive at a correct decision at a correct time. So, Chair, I still move to say, Chair, no restoration. No oral hearing. We have exhausted the matter. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Horn. Yeah, thank you, Chair. I also wanted to just address the issue. I don't think we should leave the arguments made by the Honorable Ndlozi to the effect that what we will be doing is saying as Parliament we're not prepared to listen to the people unanswered. I'm partly covered by the Honourable Ngola, who said that, rightly so, that if one looks at what Parliament is doing is to act to the benefit of the people, as a matter of fact. If you look at our constitutional order, then it is also so that the people speaks through, amongst others, their elected public representatives. And the people, through the president, or a president, has put Mr. Mukwege in a position of trust. And now what still stands, I would say, to a large extent, bar his bare denials, uncontested, is that both courts and the Mogoro inquiry has found that he, on his own accord, broke that trust with the people. So the president was duty-bound to act. We have our own role to play. And I think it must be made very clear that we, and it is so that the Honourable Ndlozi at that stage was not part of the committee, when we decided on the process, we specifically said we will ask for written representations. And just by the way, if you want to then start scrutinising the fairness, nobody has even dealt with the fact that we at that stage even said we will not, as a point of departure, ask the President to respond to those representations. What we will do with those representations, and that's what we're doing today, is to firstly see whether there is something that hits us between the eye as a committee that must be addressed further, and then we can expand the process to include asking the President for answers or even invite people to come and appear before the committee. So it was by definition never really excluded. But to return then to the basic argument, the matter raised in the letter of the 30th of October, in our view, do not raise a sufficient argument, do not pass the most basic of hurdles to necessitate us, in our view, to allow for these oral representations. The Honourable Mohammed, right at the outset, was quite correct in saying the argument is set out in the letter. And I think we have dealt with the argument and the fact that there, in essence, is no merit to the argument, amongst others, because, as you pointed out, Judge Henny correctly asked, but if this was such a grievous flaw in the process, why have you not pursued the legal avenues available to you to deal with it? So therefore, Chair, I don't think there's a duty on us to really, in pursuing a fair process, allow Mr. Mukwege yet another bite at the cherry by way of oral representations on this matter. We know what the argument is. I think the majority of the committee is of the view that there's not really much turning on the argument, and therefore we must go back to the merits. And our view is, if I listen to colleagues correctly, everybody has expressed, apart from Dr. Ndlozi, that on the merits there's also no reason to restore. Thank you. Honourable Chair.
Chairperson, I don't think, Chairperson, that it would be fair for a member to allege that we don't want to listen to the presentation of advocate Mukwege on this matter, because, Chairperson, we, the committee and also other institutions, they have done their work. We're not saying we only depend, our decision will only be depending on what other committees are saying. We have looked into this issue, we went through the documents as our, I don't want to go back to what the other honorables have already alluded to. But for me now, Chairperson, where I am, I want to say there are lessons that are learned from this situation, from this matter that we are dealing with. A clear message must be sent to our the people that we employ in these positions, that they cannot come here and cry and say they've been given a responsibility to do their work, and they, within their space of work, there are a code of conduct that they need to follow. There are also a chairperson. They must also respect their work or their the place of the situation in their place of employment. They cannot come and cry and say, chairperson, the political, in fact, they made whatever they did, because of the atmosphere or the situation where they were placed. It was politically charged. It cannot be correct, chairperson. We need to send a clear message that it is important that when you are given a responsibility, respect that responsibility and do as expected. More so if you are employed in this institution of the important institution of NPA, chairperson. It's very important that our people have to know that it is important. We are not playing, chairperson. It has been, in fact, it has been a long time for this committee talking about this matter. We have to close it. Chairperson, I just want to also raise this point of saying, Advocate Mukwebe, he is now bringing this submission to us that he wants to come and make a presentation physically together with the legal advisors, because he has seen that the options or how Advocate Jiba, he was piggybacking, I'll say that, piggybacking on what Advocate, the groundwork that was done by Advocate Jiba for him. Now he found himself in a situation that he is exposed. Now he wants to come and bring a presentation which does not hold water to us. We have his presentation. We are working on his presentation, and he respected us initially. Now, because he sees that Advocate Jiba is no longer there, now he wants to come and begin the process, start the process from the beginning. That is not going to be allowed. We respected him. We gave him time. We agreed that let's not be unfair to him. Those are the issues that we deliberated on before we can even come to this point. So it cannot be correct that our member, my Honorable Gozi there, he was not previewed, chairperson, in terms of the submission that was made by or the agreement that we took as a committee together with the former member of his party that was represented here. The EFF itself agreed on what we are doing here. Chairperson, yes, Advocate Mulaudzi was part of us when we took those decisions. So it cannot be corrected that now we are being accused of not being wanting to listen to Advocate Mukwebe. With Advocate Jiba, she made the work very easy for us. So we agree with her withdrawal. And with this one, we agree that chairperson, we're not going to give him any opportunity. It is important that as a committee, we have considered all the submissions that we have been given. And therefore, chairperson, we are saying no reinstatement. Thank you, Chair. Restoration.
Honorable members, we had agreed that Honorable Masego Tele will be the last one. So can I suppress you? I think honorable members, both the NPA Act and the Cape High Court have made a point that this matter has to be done and be dispensed with expeditiously. The Act says that it must be done and dispensed with within 30 days or soon thereafter. So the law itself does not give us unlimited time. And in the Cape High Court, the decision of Judge Henney also emphasized that particular point. Having listened to all the honorable members, I don't think I'll be incorrect to say overwhelming majority of members are of the view that, one, on whether we should allow Advocate Mukwege to make a representation, that we should not agree to that, and secondly, that we have not found compelling reasons to restore Advocate Mukwege and Advocate Jiba. That is the decision of the majority of the members. We have taken note of the arguments raised by Advocate Ndlozi of the EFF, but overwhelmingly, the committee is of the view that we don't allow him to make representation. He had a fair amount of time to make his representation, and we have to answer the question as prescribed by the law whether there are reasons to restore him. The law gives the power to remove the NDPP, the deputy director and the special director to the president. The question that parliament has to answer is whether to restore or not to restore. And the overwhelming majority of members say we should not restore. Can we rest it at that? Thank you very much. So tomorrow we will receive a comprehensive report that we will adopt. And I've been advised that we will debate. In fact, the matter will go to the House on Tuesday next week, so that it can be passed, because generally we are way over the 30-day period. We are using the reasonable time. And beyond this term, if we don't adopt this, we are going to run into serious legal problems. So next week, tomorrow we'll be adopting the report. Next week we are debating it. Honorable Ndlozi?
Yeah, Chair, a quick one. I apologize, I won't be here tomorrow. I've got a court matter in East London, but I really appeal that the report integrates our view and objection. That's all. That is what we appeal, so that the record reflects.
I think also on Tuesday you will have the opportunity when you declare to express the views of the EFF. Thank you very much, honourable members. Can we go to the second matter? There will be no break. Let's go to the second matter. Honourable members, there is going to be a vacancy next month in the office of the Public Protector, the vacancy of the Deputy Public Protector. We have conducted interviews. Oh, yes, you are excused. We have conducted interviews on the 12th and the 13th of November for about 7 candidates, of which we are to recommend one person to the National Assembly to be recommended for appointment by the President as the Deputy Public Protector. The following names were interviewed: Advocate Shedrick Nguna, Mr. Buang Jones, Advocate Mushweshwe, Advocate Noxolo Mbangeni, Advocate Lwazi Kubekeli, Advocate Puleng Machelo, and Advocate Kolega Kalega. Members, we had extensive interviews. I will now open this time for members to deliberate on the performance of the candidates and the recommended candidate that will be presented to the National Assembly for approval and appointment by the President. Dr. Ndlozi?
Yeah, Chairperson, are you not going to provide some framework? Because we'll finish tomorrow, you see.
Yeah, sorry. In fact, we have done the security. In fact, the SSA has done the security screening. It has been circulated. It's before you. From the report of the security screening, I think one candidate has a judgment, a civil judgment, and another one has a pending criminal case. But I think the report has been circulated. It's in front of you. What I propose to do, honourable members, is to go through each candidate's performance and have a discussion, and then thereafter members will be in a position to recommend as to who do we take. Honourable Jose?
No. I wanted to propose, Honourable Chairperson, that we do not, you might find the shortest way there. If all of us spoke first to who we thought, perhaps you're going to find that there's going to be one name. And then if we agree, we agree. If in our proposals there are two names, then we deliberate on those two names. Unless all of us here might have all the seven names in our minds, which I doubt very much. In which case, then you can return to your original position. I'm saying that, firstly, you give the opportunity to members to say a name and stop at that. And once we have done so, it's possible that you're going to have lesser names than seven. And then when we have lesser names than seven, it may be two or three. I suspect three. Then we deliberate on the three, as opposed to deliberating on the seven. Unless in that process, all the seven names are nominated, then we're back to square one. That's my proposed framework. So you give an opportunity, we say the names, then you open for deliberation on the names that would have been nominated by ourselves now.
Honorable members, can we first have a short discussion on the process?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I had an opportunity of, as well, watching a repeat of the entire process. And if that was the performance given by the committee, I'm sure South Africans are satisfied and they have confidence on the work that this committee is doing. I have as well learned that a number of South Africans were watching the process, and they have commended the actual work we have done as the committee. There was no biasness, there was no behind the door briefings. We just went there as members of the committee to do the work bestowed upon us. We had to be harsh where it was necessary for us to.
Well, sorry, honourable members. Let's just, we're discussing the process. What are you suggesting the process to be? Honourable Ndlozi is suggesting that we just have a name and then... so I think let's focus ourselves then on the process, then we agree on the process. Then
when you say on the process, you mean we are evaluating the work we have done, or I'm not getting you?
How do we arrive at the recommended name?
Then let me withdraw.
Yeah, because honorable members, we must bear in mind that should a situation arises where a candidate who has not been appointed asks for reasons why, we should have been in a we should be in a position to say these are the reasons. So that is why we should not have generally shortcuts. Let's have a proper process of eliminating people and recommending people, because those reasons must be filed so that in case one day they are required, we can be able to produce them. Noted, Honorable Ndlozi. Honorable Mohammed.
Yeah, Chair, in line with your request, I think we would agree with Dr. Ndlozi that we take a view that we have two names that we deliberate on, that we do an exclusionary process, because there were not a lot of candidates in any case. And this state security report does help. We first have to just to decide the status of this report in regard to those two candidates on paragraph 2.2 and 2 and 3. Then we dispose of that. Thereafter, did you give us a chance to point out the two candidates? And if the committee is not either with the two, then we deliberate on it. If not, then the democratic process should prevail. Thank you.
I think on the issue raised by Advocate Mohammed, there can be no counter to it, because we have to agree on the status of the SSA report as to what is the decision concerning one person who has a judgment. Within that judgment of 13,000, couple of hundreds, can bar him or her from being appointed, and what do we say to the pending criminal case? Honorable Ndlozi, every time when in the House they want to have a lot of votes to make us to vote, they'll say, no, we are here to work. So I would want to remind him that we are here to work today. Honorable Ndlozi?
Yes, Chair. Work has to be efficient. It's very important, because you can be busy over nothing. So in order for us to be efficient, if we do not deliberate on a name, and I want to remind you, we eliminated the same way to arrive at the seven. And then we had a debate where I was the one who was disagreeing on a certain name. That was the process. So the question, if it comes later on, yeah, give me the reasons why you didn't appoint me, we'll write a very proper letter. The Parliament Portfolio Committee found you inadequate, or your interview unsatisfactory. The point is that they've gone through the process, and the process was rigorous, was fair, and all of that. I suggest that we stick to the same model as we did before. There are no legal challenges to it. But secondly, when you started, you confirmed the status of the report. So the report is giving us its opinion on security and what. If a person wants to argue for number 4 in this SSA report, we will listen to you. But it must not be a priori. Again, I that is basically underscore my earlier suggestion, that let's do the names, and then we're going to take very long fighting here over two or one name, or you'll hear. Because remember, this is a process, but at the same time, there are numbers here, Chief.
Honorable Hon?
No, Chair, I wanted to approach, or just maybe ask some clarity on the SSA letter. paragraph 2.2 talks about a pending criminal record. Now, I don't understand what it is, and I've asked for advice from the Honourable Breitenbach, who also has not heard of a pending criminal record. So it's unclear whether there's criminal charges still to be dealt with by a court and whether there's a finding of guilt and not a sentence yet. So if we could get appraised on what that really means, it would be good. And then maybe secondly, just as a general input, I think we must also, we did ask for the screening report, and I think what is of relevance ultimately is whether the, whatever the pending criminal record means, is whether these two candidates in their questionnaire, when asked whether there is circumstances of which Parliament must be made aware, whether they did declare the pending criminal record or the charges or whatever, and the civil judgment in the other case, and not to preempt it, but one would then argue that if they did not, then we must make certain, obvious, hopefully, certain conclusions on the fact of non-declaring. But that's, that obviously is aside from, I'm not disagreeing with either Dr. Nglozi in saying that maybe we are of one mind, but I also agree with you that ultimately in our decision making we must be able to give reasons. So I don't know whether it would be, even if utopia arises and we're all of one mind, good enough a reason to say that we were unanimous right from the outset. So maybe a short discussion on the merits and demerits of each candidate would assist the process.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Having a look at this SSA report, I'm assuming that a pending criminal record in this sense means one that is still alive, still current. It hasn't left due to time. I'm assuming that that's what it means, because it is a record. And then the civil judgment, I've looked at both of the declarations filled in by the candidates, and there is certainly plenty of opportunity for both of them to disclose these situations that are now highlighted here. And both of them very clearly said there was nothing to declare. That raises a question of integrity for an interview of this nature, for a job of this nature. You would expect people who are, particularly people who are lawyers, to over-declare rather than under-declare. And when you over-declare, you take the sting out of it, because then you have an opportunity to explain it. They've chosen not to declare it, so there was, the sting is there, and there has been no explanation. And so we must live with the fact that the information was not voluntarily disclosed. So they hope to slide by without this coming to the attention of the committee, which raises the problem of integrity, and I think the committee should consider that very carefully.
And in addition, our first question to the candidates, I think it was question number two, was whether you have anything further to disclose, and those things did not come up. Now, can I suggest that we take that as a strong criteria for excluding the two and focus on the five? Honorable Ndlozi?
No, Chairperson. If a person wants to make the argument for those people, we must hear them. That's my point. I think it's fair that we put it that way. They were shortlisted, they came to present, you know, so let's go to the names. You may not even have to undercut them on anything. But if somebody here wants to argue for any of those names, my view is that we must hear them. We must not just cut them a priori. Yeah, you get what I mean.
That's fair. Let's have a discussion on the names. Let's go to the names. Honorable Hisham Mohammed.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me perhaps start. We're not going to go the route that was said earlier. We're not going to exclude anybody. We're going to consider all of the names because we feel we won't reach a situation where we have to express ourselves about the status of the state security report at this stage, because if we do, there's too many questions that we still have to ask. We feel the information in front of us enables us to deliberate on the matter as we interviewed the people, the candidates. Now, Chair, looking at the candidates, let me start off perhaps by arguing that the framework and the criteria was very well set out in the advertisement that went out. All the candidates were satisfied when you post to them whether they're happy with the interviews. And there was a set questions prepared and stated by the members of this committee to each candidate, which was consistent. And there were responses. Now, just arguing on the response, firstly I want to say that this is a deputy public protector position that will support the public protector in the office, and largely the responsibility, given the current challenges of the public protector's office as we know, requires quite a lot of administrative support in particular to start off. Secondly, it requires a supervision not only of the auxiliary services in that office, having taken into account the annual report that they submitted, but also relationship building when it comes to administrative staff. Thirdly, we note the responsibility of the previous deputy public protector, and there needs to be oversight of the work and investigations in particular that is being conducted. The public protector herself pointed out that there's much room for improvement there. She has recently taken certain decisions in that regard, as we have noted publicly, as she has expressed that she requires the investigative directorate of her office to be beyond reproach, and that ethical conduct is critical at number one there. In that regard, the deputy public protector, although dependent on the delegations being given to by the public protector to the deputy, over the last two terms or one term of 7 years, we have seen the outgoing deputy public protector also raise a number of issues that he think is there that can be improved. Now, these are all composite, and looking at the candidates, I think a person with a legal background, not necessarily legal qualification, but a legal background who's exposed to investigative work, and thirdly to assessing status of evidence, and the nature of evidence is very critical if we are to assist the public protector. If we take into account all the judgments that has been recently issued over the last 3 years, again there the deputy public protector can only enhance and assist, and especially if it's a legal person. Now, if we look at the candidate, there's a number of questions, such as Honorable Breitenbach asked very interesting questions, if I just borrow from that. What is the rule of law? Now, we know, even high school, with all respect to the candidates, children would tell you, those who's exposed to constitutional development, that the rule of law basically enables us to limit any abuse of power, of authority anyway. Now, many of the candidates seems to, we don't know whether they were nervous or what, but seems to have not been able to answer the due process questions, the rule of law. But there was only one candidate who came nearest to that. And the candidate has a legal background, one, has been dealing with although criminal trials procedure, has been involved in a number of years for in investigation nature of work, and is exposed to the criminal justice system as a whole, and civil justice system earlier in her career. I'm obviously referring to Advocate Koleka Kaleka, who very clearly was way ahead than any other candidate. And she was confident, she was very clearly experienced for the purpose of it, what is required in a Deputy Public Protector. The only issue that arose in the interview by colleagues here, by members, was the issue that she worked with the previous Minister of Finance, Mr. Malusi Gigaba. Now, and there are certain views around that, which is not factual, or any judicious record that one can find of negativity. In fact, she answered that question to say, within 2 weeks after the referred minister was removed from his position, or moved on, or redeployed, she moved on to another minister who had confidence, and she responded that she was there largely as a legal advisor, as a professional, and that there was no other question put to her to counter that. Chair, I'm deliberately mentioning that point because one was interested to see what is behind that. The rest we can only objectively and rationally judge the candidate that is in front of us in what is on the record and what we could find in terms of our investigation as this committee has done. And nothing disqualifies this particular candidate. I was very impressed with the candidate's demeanor. She seems to be able to, someone who will be able to dispose herself under pressure, very clearly given her record. Unless something else comes, but we haven't had the opportunity or get the information, or if there is. So there's nothing in front of us that's negative, that disqualifies her. Public confidence, lastly, Che. There's nothing that defies or that negates public confidence. In fact, her record clearly shows that the public would be confident. We're not talking about politics here, we're talking about purely on merit and experience. And can Edward Koleka able to do the job of the public protector or deputy public protector and public protector, perhaps? Clearly, this is my submission, Chair, that the committee agree that this is clearly a candidate that was way ahead than most of the other candidates. And there may be one or two others too, but I want to just motivate for this candidate. I can elaborate further if required, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mohammed. Other hands? Honorable Bredenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me say at the outset that I was very disappointed by all of the candidates. And if this wasn't such an urgent matter to be dealt with on an urgent basis, I would suggest that we re-advertise the position. Because none of those candidates inspired huge amounts of confidence in me. I found all of them very disappointing. The legal knowledge I found to be lacking. Very few of them, in fact none of them, in my view, to my satisfaction, could describe either what the rule of law means or what due process is, which I found extremely concerning, bearing in mind the job that they're going to be required to do. But it's also no good looking at this in a vacuum. We're not just appointing a person to a job. We have oversight over that office. We know what's happening in that office. We know what we're sending the person who we appoint to go and do. and it's a big job, it's an important job, and there's a lot of work to be done. The current Deputy Public Protector has told this committee and South Africa as a whole that he has been used basically as a post office, hasn't done anything of consequence, he's been sidelined and ignored, and he's had no input into the big important reports that have come out of that office, more particularly when he should have had. So we're not appointing somebody to just go and sit in an office, take up space, get paid a lot of money, to do nothing for the next 7 years. We need to consider that we need to appoint somebody who's got to make a contribution to that office, who's got to fit into that office, who's got to be able to assist in improving that office in a variety of ways, and that would take a very specific kind of personality. I'll start with Mr. Mohammed's suggestion of Ms. Kaleka. I can't agree that she had the stellar interview that he suggests that she had. I found her to be defensive, emotional, and I don't think that she dealt with all the questions with quite the aplomb that Mr. Mohammed is suggesting that she did. It was very clear from the questions of Mr. Horn and later Dr. Ndlozi that she continued to work for a minister who had lied under oath, that she knew about it. She was his legal advisor. And she did nothing to correct that. She didn't advise him to file a supplementary affidavit to correct his mistake. If one assumes it was a mistake, if it was a lie, why would any lawyer, why would any self-respecting lawyer continue to associate yourself with a man who lies and carry on destroying your reputation in that regard, unless there was something in it for you? So I have very serious doubts about Ms. Kaleka, and I cannot possibly support her nomination. There's also the matter of the way she conducted herself in the National Prosecuting Authority. She was the head of the Society of State Advocates. It is a position that represents all the state advocates in South Africa. And in that position, you expect her to fight for basic concepts like the rule of law and due process, prosecutorial independence, those things that are defined in the Constitution as being essential. And she didn't do that. Well, she was the head of the state security of the State Advocate Society. What she did is she supported Menzi Simelane. And Menzi Simelane's first words when he came to the NPA were, "I'm here to implement the policies of the ruling party." Nothing to do with the law, nothing to do with the constitution, and she supported him. Menzi Simelane is has carried a huge responsibility for the hollowing out of the National Prosecuting Authority and its integrity. And it is, he is part of the reason why the NPA is in the position it is in today. And Ms. Kaleka supported him. She did nothing to fight for prosecutorial independence. She did nothing to ensure that prosecutions are done without fear, favour or prejudice. So I cannot support her. And I think Mr. Mohammed is overstating the success of her interview by some considerable margin. Having said that, I find it very difficult to wholeheartedly support any of these candidates. But at a push, I must then concede that I'm not sure, because his name appears differently in a number of places, but I think his surname is Toba. He's described as Moshesh somewhere. But that gentleman, I think, demonstrated the kind of demeanor that you need in that office. He was calm, he was rational, he thought about his answers. I think he can bring some sort of stability to that office. I think that he would be a good counterfoil for the public protector. I think he will offer the kind of support that she needs. I think he's the kind of person that she'll be able to work with and delegate to. And that will see the office grow in stature rather than end up in an unseemly squabbling. So I would be inclined then to support this gentleman. Thank you.
Honorable Hon.
Thank you, Chair. I want to say that yes, we as a committee obviously must look objectively at the duties as prescribed by the Act of well, duties is not the correct word, but the position of the Deputy Public Protector, and others have correctly identified assisting, supporting the Public Protector as core functions of the Deputy. However, I also believe that in contextualizing this specific demand, we cannot close our eyes for the limitations that's glaringly obvious there, obviously present now. And the Honorable Ahmed has in a diplomatic manner referred to the fact that quite possibly someone with good legal expertise and certain other investigative backgrounds and so on could go and assist. I want to add another element, and that is that one needs somebody who's very straightforward and clear about the way the law should be analyzed, interpreted, as well as sets of facts. What we in essence now need in that office, if we personalize to an extent the appointment, is a voice of reason. And for that specific reason, I also cannot support Advocate Galega. Apart from what the Honorable Breitenbach has said, I think what I must add is that the overall impression created by Advocate Galega in trying to explain the unfavorable or negative situation she has found herself in the past is that she left an impression that because she's well-spoken, she should be able to get away with using a lot of words without addressing the issues that is really present. So for example, if in respect of the Fireblade issue, she was first very quick to say, but oh, I only arrived there after the affidavits were set up. That obviously left the glaring question, if you then the legal advisor looking after the best interests of the minister, why don't you get involved after the first bloody nose the minister gets in the court of first instance? That's now apart from the issues raised by the Honourable Nglozi on that specific matter. So ultimately, in my assessment, unfortunately, this candidate has explained the very same type of tendency to use what I want to call verbal gymnastics to explain away difficult situations. And I want to say to this committee, irrespective of what we think of the incumbent, this self-belief in your ability to explain away problems and mistakes you have made in the past is exactly, in my view, the reason why the current public protector is always finding herself at the wrong end of court judgments. So the very last thing we should do now is to send yet another person there who, with respect, think that they are so clever that they will always be able to explain away difficult situations. So for that reason, I fully agree with the Honourable Breitenbach. It would be a grave mistake of Parliament to send Ms. Galega there. Thank you.
Are these the only hands? Honourable Rosa? Honourable Jale, Honourable Mofokeng.
No, thanks, should I go? Thanks very much, Chairperson. No, the office of the public protector is
a very important office, and I guess we should begin there. That it's part of the Chapter 9 institutions. Its existence or origins flow directly from the highest law in the land. It's the highest calling. There are many callings in society. And the office of the public protector is in the highest order. And these institutions need people with ethical credibility, whose ethical script and ethical history is unquestionable. Meaning, when we think about these people, there should not be a doubt in our heads about their ethical standing. Secondly, it seems to me that the Deputy Public Protector's position from a skills point of view, merit, should ordinarily be a person who's going to complement the incumbent. Now, I don't agree. You know, I think the outgone Deputy Public Protector was an incredibly selfish, egocentric man who lost out in the race to become a public protector. I doubt very much his view. His views must be taken with a pinch of salt. Because it's not just about Advocate Mukweba, and it's also about his conduct in relation to Advocate Tuluma Donsel. And some of those views that he holds, he has been holding them even before. I'm saying that because if you do not want to deputize me, it's going to be very difficult for a working relationship in that institution. In any institution, you are deputizing the incumbent. So the matter of the Deputy Public Protector coming in with a proper attitude like that is important. Unless there are questions where they have to do with you breaking the law, and or you are forced to break the law or undermine the constitution, then we can talk. Otherwise, I think the guy is just noisy, empty noise. The second thing is that, well, the third thing in my submission, you also want people who believe like injustice. It doesn't matter how much money they get out of the pursuit of that justice. You know, comrades, if we are about money, we shouldn't be members of parliament. But there's this calling, which when you sit somewhere, there's a fire in you that says, I have to be part of those who are putting aside their selfish financial interests and put the country ahead. The calling to that office requires that type of ability. And therefore, Miss Galega was extremely confident. Confidence, unfortunately, in this case is not an issue, because there was no candidate who was not confident. You can be confident but on a tangent. One, she was asked about declaration and all those things. She didn't say that she was a leader of the ANC. Specifically the ANC Youth League, only upon being pressed
on that question. She says, yeah, I grew up in the ranks of the African National Congress, the Youth League. I was a member, blah, blah, blah. An important piece of information. Other people had put those... it's an important thing for us to think about. Do you acknowledge that there is this political background to you? Not in the struggle. Now. Not in exile or... No, now. She was in the Youth League. And she doesn't think it's important for us to know. Only when we press her. And then she confidently confirms and all of that. But it's not that you were either in a political party or not. What was important about that question was to test whether you competently understand the responsibility that's going to be bestowed upon you in relation to your membership to the ANC, or having been in the ANC, and so on and so forth. So the second one is that, comrade, the ethical test of a minister who lied under oath, you know what is the trick there? She didn't resign. She was an advisor. I don't even remember Marusi Igaba resigning because of the oath question. I may be mistaken. I mean, not oath, the fact that he lied under oath. I don't remember, but that's the person who resigned. So if Marusi Igaba resigns, your job ends. You have not taken a stand. And I think it's not whether it's 2 weeks or it's 5 months, it's how she responded to that. She said, I see no ethical contradictions with having worked for a person who lied under oath. She said that more than once. Now, that understanding that we were teasing is a problem to me. Let's say indeed she knew, she was briefed as soon as the judgment comes out, comrades, it means we're going to be out now, so she didn't have to take a stand per se. But when we tease her about her understanding of that situation, of those circumstances, she sees no ethical contradictions. And I think that it's seriously questionable. And then the last part was the question of why did you move if you were so passionate about justice, the pursuit of justice? You were already in an institution and dealing with high-profile cases. We need high-profile examples. Says, no, I got a better job, a better paying job. I needed to grow. Okay, there was a threat to life, but this was a better paying job. And I don't know. I don't know you want to give the people of South Africa such a person into the office of the Deputy Public Prosecutor. The last point about her, Honorable Chairperson, is that the skills really are not fundamentally different. Her background and all of that is not fundamentally different to the incumbent. Now, I agree with... of all these candidates, by the way, Mr. Moshoeshoe was the best. But also, you know, that background of SARS brings a really different experience to the Office of the Public Protector, of having dealt in that space of financial laws, of the entire legislation around finance. But having worked there, I don't know that you want to. That's a rare skill of all the candidates. That's rare. That's extremely rare. All of them don't have that type of background. It's distinctively different. She will, on the table when they are sitting, she will have a distinctively different input to the incumbent based on his experience. Really, this person is going to complement. We're not repeating knowledge and discourse. He's got a substantial experience within SARS. You know, I don't like SARS, but I mean, I was even wondering if he worked with the rogue unit or whatever units those ones were questioning in the public protector's report. I was uncomfortable. But, you know, Bill Clinton always said the most important question in politics is in relation to what? If I'm going to raise a candidate and say they are bad, but in relation to what? This candidate is bringing a substantially different experience, different expertise, different knowledge of different aspects of the law. And I think he will serve as a great, great resource to the public protector. And on those basis, Chairperson, I support, or we support, Advocate Moshoeshoe Jerry Toba. The final thing to say is to pick up on the earlier speaker's input about, in general, like on a general basis, we had extremely articulate people. You can't deny that. All of them were articulate. But about what? Confident, dealing, responding and all of that, but that can't be the debate. Let's give South Africa the best of the best. I hold no brief. On the basis of the performance, I'm very persuaded. And I think that in relation to all the seven people that came here, but on the basis of what is on the record as well, you've got the best here, the best candidate, who was in SASCO, but it's okay, he's the best candidate of all of them. Thank you.
Honorable Mfuteng. Honorable Jere, sorry.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Ntose, your mic.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, let me start from all these names that have been mentioned here, that I think, except those that has been flagged by the security check, Chairperson, but those five names, indeed we must come out with one name. For me, Chair, where I'm sitting, two names that I would recommend that we look into, but I'm going to say support one. Before that, Chairperson, let me agree with members that the Office of the Public Protector is very important, and whoever is going to get into the shoes of the Deputy Public Protector who's leaving, it should be somebody that capable, competent, yes, ethical. But Chair, I want to raise the issue of all these candidates were given an opportunity indeed to make presentation in front of the committee. And we were all here listening. Of importance, Chair, is that even the citizen of South Africa had an opportunity to listen. And knowing South Africans, Chairperson, they have views. Up to this far, it seems as if the matter has been left to us, because many comments that we had about other names that have been mentioned even earlier, even the name of Advocate Kolega. Earlier, when we came here, when we started with the process, yes, it was not a favorable name. I want to say that, yes, Chairperson, because the reason why we made sure that we came into these interviews with clear minds, it was to make sure that we get information and I'll take the words of Honorable Janji, who's not here, that I'm going to squeeze you for 5 minutes to make sure that I get whatever information I want. That's what Honorable Janji said. And it was a process, Chairperson, where I think most of us, we really indeed try to give our best in making sure that we leave no stone unturned. Chairperson, I'm convinced that we did the best that we could in that situation, in making sure that we ask questions from all sides. But Che, coming to the point of deciding exactly who we must get amongst these, to me it will be those five names that have been cleared for now, even though I was going to say let's bring others to add on the number that has been given there without being flagged. But Chair, some of the issues that we have raised, members have raised here, some of them indeed, there's no legal impediments, Chairperson. On Advocate Colette in particular. We came here, Chairperson, Chairperson, we were made to believe that this candidate has indeed issues that legally we needed to make sure that we bring them to forth and make sure that we deal with them, Chairperson. We dealt with everything. From my side, Chairperson, and I'm going to confide myself on the issues of women, not because they are women, because they are, for me, I was part of this interview, and I was happy and I'm glad that Chairperson, the name of Talega Kolega will be the name that I'll go with. I said two names. The other name that I was, maybe if I was not sure about this one, it was the name of Advocate Mkuna, Chairperson. I feel that we need to give Advocate Kolega a chance, not that because we give her a chance because she's a woman or because, yes, partly she's a woman and we are here, some of us also, on the mission of making sure that we empower women and we make sure that women are also being escalated to such positions. I know that in that office there's another woman, but I don't think it will make any harm to bring Advocate Kolega into the picture. Also, Chairperson, in support of that, the experience that she was a senior deputy director of public prosecution, it's an add-on, Chairperson, on the matter. I'm for that name, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Fuke.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think my honorable members have spoken, and I want to make it clear that I'm not going to speak about anybody that I don't want to think that can be a deputy public protector. I'm going to speak about Advocate Kolega. I'm impressed the way she carried herself. I'm impressed that she was from the onset said to us, I understand that there are issues about me and I think I should be given an opportunity to clear myself. And she did exactly that. She was asked about Richard Ngludi. She answered. She was asked about Advocate Melanie. She answered. She was asked about the Guptas. She also cleared that matter in front of us. And if there's anything that was objected at that time that it was not true, nobody said so. She managed to answer the Honorable Breitenbach, knowing very well their background, without emotions. She also gave an accurate questions on the Public Protector's Office and what is expected of that office. When a question was asked about the situation of the current Deputy Public Protector and the Public Protector, what will you do? She was never emotional. She said, I'll sit with her and I'll be able to can try to make her see things through, noting that she is the one who's the Public Protector. And you can see clearly that we have a future. Once the Public Protector's Office is over after 7 years, you've got a future in this young woman. And I'm saying that we should judge her with her capabilities, not with any other thing that happened, because anyway, there's nothing that is coming here in front of this woman. She was never fired. No way, in any way, she was fired. But what I can say is that we should give her an opportunity to be able to can be in that office. And she studied everything from the budget to the programs. And most of the candidates that were there, some of them couldn't even Mushweshwe. Mushweshwe failed to can tell us the programs, I can tell you. He couldn't come out with the programs clearly. And I'm saying that Mushweshwe could also talk more about the conflict resolution. Those are the things that he was doing well. And I can tell you what Buang also did. But this is one candidate amongst many that was actually convincing. Even if there were negatives that were coming left and right, I don't actually think that I will confine myself to that. I will confine myself to having seen a young woman that is ready to lead and should be given an opportunity to do so. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mola.
Thank you very much. I won't waste the committee's time by repeating what has been said. Chair, I did not expect us to have the same discussion again. I am reminded that there was time where I had to be cut short for an explanation of the issues that were flagged in some of the candidates. And that, in actual fact, answered a number of things which were even raised in the selection committee meeting. So I'm worried, Chair, if we're going to have same discussions on daily basis, same discussions, but it's fine, Chair, let's move. In the questioning process, we have agreed on how we're going to do questioning. And prior to the interviews, there was a questionnaire that was sent to all candidates. And in that questionnaire, there is none that asks whether one of the candidates was part of a political party or not. Two, in the framework we did of what skills and capabilities are we looking for in the candidates, there is none that we say a person must not have been part of any political party in South Africa. There was a line of questioning which was prepared for all of us. Even there is none that says, declare if you are part of a political party. But beyond that, were given time to ask follow-up questions or any kind of a question. And the question that arose of taking, partaking in any political party life was asked and was answered in the interview. Now, we are taken back to on what the Constitution provides. Because citizens of the country are protected by the Constitution on whether someone wants to join a political party or not. I'm reminded of a case, Chair, that was South African Municipal Workers Union against the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. But I was embarrassed by the court for having barred some of the members of society from taking part in political activities. And the court said, you are breaking the law of the country, the supreme law of the country. So we can't be taken aback to that situation for people who have decided back then to be part of a political party. Another thing, Chair, that I think we are doing is to persecute a person for crimes they did not commit. Advisors to ministers only advise. It's ministers who take decisions on what must happen. The minister lied. No, Xola, it's you, you're wrong. The minister did this, the minister did that. And I believe that proper procedures were dealt with in terms of dealing with the minister. But what we should ask ourselves is that, what role did the advisor play? Which was explained in the interview properly and thoroughly. Even the issue of the comments on Simela and NPA, it was properly explained comprehensively in the interview. And none of us in the interview registered a dissatisfaction in the explanation. So I think, Chair, at some point we must not be unfair because of some of the things that were cleared before us. A number of candidates in the interview had been able to give what we want to see from a deputy protector. But I think what we're doing now is to say who performed best in the interview. And I agree with the honorable member that says Advocate Kolega Galega was undoubtedly performing very good in the interview and has been able to explain comprehensively of whatever issues were tagged in her name. That goes back to what some of us may view as unethical conduct. We have taken the perceived unethical conduct to test that day. And I'm glad that a number of issues were explained to us and the committee understood. Hence, we did not register a dissatisfaction of what was provided to us. Here is a screening report. There is nothing that is raised regarding this, the name of the last person, Alec. So I move, Chair, without wasting any time, by any further time, to support the nomination of Advocate Kolega Gale. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Nivot Rahans.
Thank you, Chair. No, I don't have my hand up, but seeing as you asked, I would like to support what my honourable members have said with the nomination of Kolega Galega. I support what, I won't repeat what they have said, I will just register my support for the nomination. Thank you.
Honestly, I thought you had raised your hand. Honorable Joseph. Oh, that's fine.
So, Chair, if I may, we've heard from all members, but we've not heard from you. Can we hear whether you also are disciplined CADA today? Honorable Dozen?
No, Chairperson, thank you. I just need two factual problems. Because I like intellectual honesty when we debate. We couldn't say our dissatisfaction in the interview, because this is the time procedurally where we're supposed to. So, honorable members couldn't have heard us say we're dissatisfied, because the process of deliberation is now about what you're happy with and what you're not happy with. That's the factual thing which we all are doing, and we're not blaming people that, no, you should have told the candidate, I'm dissatisfied. No, it's not done like that.
No,
no,
that's
number
not
two.
Order.
How is it out
of order? No, that's out of order.
How is it out of
order? Honorable members, if you are dissatisfied, you will be given an opportunity to respond.
Yeah. So I think that is not fair to us as members of the opposition. If comrades have said some way and deliberated in our absence and now hold a strong view, it's okay to just say that, don't blame us or something like that, create a process we did not agree with. It's just the courtesy of an intellectual honesty. The last point I want to make, because unless Chairperson is reopening this question. But I find it very problematic, you see. And I think members of the committee who are persuading us, if they are doing that, are on this name. Because they say the answers were satisfactory in relation to the NPA, in relation to the ethical questions. We've put an argument. It's not whether she belonged to a political party or not. It's her understanding of what that means. No one says, as an ANC member, a former COP member, a former SASCO member, even the name we are forwarding, the person said they are part of SASCO. And we did say that it's not whether they were members or not. It's at a higher level. What do you understand the relationship of your membership to the ANC and this high office means? I'm really just asking for a certain fair engagement of each other's arguments, so we don't misrepresent each other. Otherwise, there's no use in deliberating. None of us said no one must be in a political party or must have not been in a political party. We raised the question, and then the question of the ethical thing. We said what is unsatisfactory about the ethics answer. And you say it was satisfactory, but you're not telling us in what way. But you're not speaking about this question of the career. How is this the best candidate who goes for jobs in relation to justice on the basis of their highest pay? This is by way of trying to win what seems like a majority of our members to really listen to their consciences. They took individual oaths. The oath you took did not have colors. It was swearing itself to the Constitution. This is a highest calling. Why do we bother ourselves with people with a questionable record, when you've got people without any questionable record? The last one is, how is it, and really this is the last misrepresentation, if you could deal, response, or at least fail with the argument, No one is saying Galega lied under oath. Then that would have been a question of the law. We're asking a question of ethics, which is higher law than the written law. The question there is, how could you consciously? And that's what ethics means. I worked in the apartheid machinery. I never questioned because they were paying me. I went around in Botswana there, in, what is that place, Botswana. I just went like a, no, it was not me who was implementing apartheid, it's the others. The calling there is, the people we need are people who experience an ethical contradiction of being associated with delinquents and constitutional delinquents. So that office is the highest of it, needs much more than what we're being given by majority of the members. I'm persuading them back, Honorable Chairperson. By the way, they've not dealt with the substance. They've firstly misrepresented our arguments, and secondly, they didn't deal with the issues that we've put on the table. And then on our candidate, the candidate that we have put, they actually implicitly agree. They agree that the candidate doesn't have questionable ethics, the candidate doesn't have any incompetence. There was a misrepresentation about the program. I can replay the video tube now. When the honorable member that is not here asked him about the program, I can replay for you. Moshoeshoe gave the programs inside the Office of the Public Protector. Disqualify him, it's okay, but on the basis of facts and what happened during the interview. Really, that's the fairness we're asking. I want South Africans to watch the next justification. Azish.
Honorable Mfokeng, Honorable Mohammed, Honorable Jele, Honorable
Ngola. Thank you, Chairperson. I think I need to make a correction on Honorable Ndlozi to say that when somebody has asked a question, you were not supposed to be asking or whatever. It happened where you found that one person was asked a question about the GBV. But I followed on that matter because I found it wanting, you know, that this person is not saying things in the right way. We had that opportunity. And at the end of every interview, you were saying, is there anything that you want to raise that maybe you feel that it cannot just lie? We were supposed to be going on and find out on other things that we're not sure. Whether your time, 5 minutes, was gone, but you were given that opportunity. And I want to say that the people had an opportunity.
Thank you. Honorable Mohammed.
Thank you, Chair. With all respect to Dr. Ndlozi, he presents, Chairperson, the ethical argument as if the rest of us are in conflict with that. He's correct, we all took an oath, but we're also rational thinking persons, individual South Africans. You know, to argue the ethical murder, point is, Jay, the candidate that I proposed, there's nothing wrong. You can't say 14 days, it took a 2 weeks, you argued very clearly. You can't say you stayed, you did nothing when the minister concerned got into controversy. If Ndlozi knows how the public service works, and maybe I'm lucky I was there for 26 years, 2 weeks is a very, very quick time to move. What happened in that 14 days, she explained. She was busy transferring. By the time when her services ended, because the services was connected to the minister's term, if you recall, it's correct, South Africans have got the liberty of the YouTube and judge for themselves. She said, after 2 weeks, when the new minister was appointed, another minister seek the service.
That in itself says a lot, Chairperson. So I don't know where the morality comes in. Why didn't Honorable Lose and his party try to apply to bar this particular person if he thinks that she's not fit as an advocate? He didn't say that, I understand. But the morality issue, there's nothing in front of us, Chair, and I would be the first one to oppose. If there was anything moral and unethical that this particular candidate did, I couldn't see. The second argument about you left your career in the public service because you therefore do not have a ponderance for justice. Now, there's no argument on that. I can't see the rationality of that with all respect. How do you say to someone who goes to become a minister's advisor, that in itself is a career move? There's nothing wrong with that. We come and go. We go into the political office, give advice, we come back to practice, we join the bar, we come back. That's the nature of legal qualified persons. To find that there's something wrong morally or uncommittal around that particular move, I can't see the argument on that. There's so many. No, it's nothing to do with money. Sometimes it's also career building. His own national chairperson does a lot of different things. He's a chairperson of a party. Yeah, I don't want to go into there. He practices. We wouldn't say that's unethical. There's an ethical issue there. Nothing wrong with that. It's accepted in the profession. So that those two points are zero point. Then coming to our own, I must point out nobody dictated to us or to me or anybody. For the record, by the way, Chair. Right? Yeah. By the way, nobody, Chairperson, the first time a member would rise and say this. I feel work very comfortable. When some of us discuss what is it there, is there somebody of the candidates appointable? That's the first thing. We said we had difficulty, and then we say, if we have that, then let's not appoint, let's re-advertise. But then arrives Advocate Paleka, and she gives the performance she did. We looked at the background information, as you pointed out. We studied it, we had an opportunity. Nothing shows me that she's not appointable. Chairperson, this particular office, in fact, needs a type of experience and background that Advocate Paleka has, especially her legal experience in particular. There's nothing here. The fact that she worked for former Minister Ligava seems to be a sore point here. I don't know where that comes in. I'm judging her purely on a professional ability, Chair. The fact that he lied or didn't lie the oath got nothing to do with her. She left immediately. If you say 2 weeks is not immediate in the context of public service, then I don't know what is leaving. In fact, another minister, where she now works, are you saying he is also unethical? Are you saying there's something wrong with what he did by employing her? Again, Chairperson, there are certain public service rules, by the way, in which advisors are appointed. Yes, they work in terms of the term of a minister, but they subject to public service rules and the PFMA. And so this candidate, Chair, lastly, have just shown in a practice, we're lucky, in fact, that we have, unknown laws is maybe slightly correct, that not many practitioners would move up and do this kind of work. Again, maybe for money they don't want to come. The flip side of the corner. It's also true. I know many of my own colleagues wouldn't come here because, like you said, if you in parliament, you don't make money. Same. So he himself says when you're here, you serve the people. When you serve us in public service outside the practice, you serve the people. And this candidate did exactly that and is doing that. Thank you very much.
Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think, Chairperson, if the position that Advocate Kolega is going to occupy comes with money, be it. She's a young woman, she needs money. But it should not be a motivation, which I don't think that from her point of view it was a motivation. Chairperson, I don't agree with the issue of saying why we go for a person who has a questionable record. somebody like myself can explain that in a different manner of saying, we can't say she's got a questionable record, because indeed some of the facts or some of the issues which are raised here, to me it was perceptions about somebody who worked with the certain individuals whom are so-called questionable individuals. We know very well that Chairperson, we did hear that advocate colleague worked with Mr. Gigaba, worked with advocate Simelani, and also there was something issue about of Mr. that policeman Richard Mruli. We did go through those questions, Chairperson. And I don't think that if we are going to take that route of saying, because I worked with you and you were my boss, and now I want to move on with my career, and then now because I worked with you and we were found not being in a position that may be satisfactory or ethically, those are our bosses as officials. We can advise up to a certain point, but the decision have to be meant or made by the person, by your boss. So we cannot crucify advocate colleague because she worked with those individuals. For now, we are looking at a young woman who is ambitious, who wants to further his career like any other person, Chairperson, that would want to see herself being at a certain level, at a certain age. I'm glad that she's young, and we're still going to looking for more from her competency and also from her input in this in this South Africa, the new democracy that we have. And also, Chairperson, if we can talk about the issue of her being an ANC Youth League member, many people will be outside there now, not being considered for any position. Because I'm sure even our Honorable there, one day, because he's still young, he would want to further himself. And but if we're going to say you were a member of EFF or a DA and we're not going to hire you, trouble, Chairperson, we're going to lose lots of competent people and good people. So can we not go to the issue of saying because you are a member, Advocate Moshoeshoe, to me there were so many questions that when I looked at him, he was not able to answer. Yes, he was good in other questions. We agree with that one. But to me, he was not a Honorable Horn distance himself from Advocate Moshoeshoe by not saying he knows Advocate Moshoeshoe. And Advocate Moshoeshoe in front of us said he knows Honorable Horn. In short, he said he knows. Thank you, Jay.
I think the last person would be Honorable Horn.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think, Chair, we must remember the reasoning why we said we want follow-up questions. I think we are deliberately ignoring the reasoning behind that. We have said we want a follow-up question because we must actually get the relevant information that we want out of all the candidates. I still remember, Chair, the issue of the candidate who was Puleng, the one of Puputatswana, when they were asked by Honorable Yankee on what are the programs that are done through the PP's office budget. And the answer was some of them is used on social grants. And Honorable Gianya registered that on the process of what has been an incorrect or inadequate response to the question. When Chair, we said there must be follow-up questions, it was necessary to get whatever information we want, whatever necessary information we want. So I think the issue of satisfying ourselves with candidates was served through our follow-up questions. I agree with Honorable Mohammed that part of the things that were flagged as unethical conduct were actually given a chance to be discussed properly, to be explained properly. I think part of what we must register ourselves on, Chair, is that public service is not merely an employment or money cow. It is meant to serve the people of South Africa. And we must actually commend those who are able to sacrifice their careers to go and serve the people of South Africa in the public service. In some of the instances, things do not go as everyone in the public service system wish. But we can't cast a doubt on the basis of what has been done by a person who's in charge for, and all that and all that. I think this argument is now becoming redundant. I think, Chair, without wasting any further time, we are done with this argument. Thank you.
Honorable members, I think we have come to the end of our deliberations. I think it's very clear, although I can say the committee is divided, but the majority of the members of the committee are of the view that Advocate Kholeka Gcaleka should be the Deputy Public Protector. I said Advocate Kholeka Gcaleka should be appointed as the Deputy Public Protector. I've already said that it's clear that the committee is divided, but the majority are of that view. I don't think it will be necessary for us to go and vote. But if members still have time that you still feel that you must vote, you can vote. Honorable Breitenbach.
Please note that the DA does not support this candidate.
The objection of the DA is noted. Honorable Rose.
Please register ours as a rejection. Well, we don't object, we reject this candidate. We also reject those who support it.
The views of the EFF are also noted. Honorable members, we will meet tomorrow to adopt, to go through the reports, the two reports of the restoration of Advocate Mukwebe and Jiba, or not restoring, and the appointment of the Deputy Public Protector. The meeting is adjourned.